Good afternoon, and welcome to the You Tell Me Show. Black History Month is an annual celebration of achievements by African Americans and a time for recognizing their central role in U.S. history. Also known as African American History Month, the event grew out of Negro History Week, the brainchild of noted historian Carter G. Woodson and other prominent African Americans. Since 1976, every U.S. president has officially designated the month of February as Black History Month. Other countries around the world, including Canada and the United Kingdom, also devote a month to celebrating Black history. So with that being said, this is Professor Kaz saying welcome to the You Tell Me Show. Are you gonna sit on the sideline or be your own boss, make up your own mind? Find time to shine and uplift my brothers and sisters, co-shooting the gift. This world is in an uproar and it's time for us to break down the door. Stand up in equality, now fight for yours. Man, you tell me. And you tell me. And you tell me. And you tell me. And you tell me. Welcome to the You Tell Me Show, the show where we discuss some of the most interesting topics from the previous week. That's the You Tell Me Show featuring Professor Kaz.
Yo, I need somewhere to go to get my vocals recorded, get some photographs taken, and shoot some video. I wish I knew a company that did all of that.
You've never heard of the Street Artist Media Group?
No. Who's a street artist?
The Street Artist is in Columbia, South Carolina. They do photography, audio, video, and podcasting. You should check them out.
Well, how do I get in contact with them? I could use them for a lot of things that I need to get done.
Look them up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Spotify. You can even email them at streetartistllc@streetartist.com. Ask for the professor. He'll be sure to help you out.
Thanks for the info. I'm going to contact the Street Artist and get all of my creative needs taken care of.
That's the Street Artist, your one-stop shop for all your media needs. Welcome back to the You Tell Me Show. The story of Black History Month begins in 1915, half a century after the 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States. That September, the Harvard-trained historian Carter G. Woodson and the prominent minister Jesse E. Moreland founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, an organization dedicated to researching and promoting achievements by Black Americans and other peoples of African descent. Known today as the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, the group sponsored a National Negro History Week in 1926, choosing the second week of February to coincide with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. The event inspired schools and communities nationwide to organize local celebrations, establish history clubs, and host performances and lectures. This year, I'm going to take a look back at some of our moments in Black history over the last four seasons. We gave out a lot of interesting facts, and I think you enjoy some of these African American historical facts. So without further ado, here's our first moment in Black history. Stokely Carmichael was the controversial and charismatic young civil rights leader who in 1966 popularized the phrase Black Power. Carmichael was a leading force in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, working in the Deep South to organize African American voters. Kwame Ture, born Stokely Standiford Churchill Carmichael, was born on June 29th of 1941. He was a prominent organizer in the civil rights movement in the United States and the global Pan-African movement. Born in Trinidad, he grew up in the United States from the age of 11 and became an activist while attending the Bronx High School of Science. He was a key leader in the development of the Black Power Movement, first while leading the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, then as the honorary prime minister of the Black Panther Party, and last as a leader of the All African People's Revolutionary Party. Carmichael was one of the original SNCC Freedom Riders of 1961 under Diane Nash's leadership. He became a major voting rights activist in Mississippi and Alabama after being mentored by Ella Baker and Bob Moses. Like most young people in the SNCC, he became disillusioned with the two-party system after the 1964 Democratic National Convention failed to recognize the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party as official delegates from the state. Carmichael eventually decided to develop independent all-black political organizations such as the Lowndes County Freedom Organization and, for a time, the National Black Panther Party. Inspired by Malcolm X's example, he articulated a philosophy of black power and popularized it both by provocative speeches and more sober writings. Carmichael became one of the most popular and controversial black leaders of the late 1960s. J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI, secretly identified Carmichael as the man who most likely would succeed Malcolm X as America's next black messiah. The FBI targeted him for counterintelligence activity through its COINTELPRO program, so Carmichael moved to Africa in 1968. He reestablished himself in Ghana and then Guinea by 1969. There, he adopted the name Kwame Ture and began campaigning internationally for revolutionary socialist Pan-Africanism. Stokely Carmichael died of prostate cancer on November 15th, 1998, at the age of 57. Stokely Carmichael, a true African-American hero. We'll be right back.
Lost everything. I stayed up half the night calling on the Lord's name. Then I remembered something my mama said. I hear her voice ringing in my head.
Just believe,
God is always on time. time, call his name, yeah.
Welcome back to the You Tell Me Show. This next segment that we're going to take a look back at is from last year at around this same time. It was celebrating the black quarterback in the National Football League. And it just so happens last year we had two black quarterbacks playing for the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. Well, this year, if you watch the Super Bowl, another black quarterback yet again has won the National Football League's most coveted prize, the Super Bowl. Let's look back at last year's moment in black history where we covered the black quarterback. Welcome to our moment in black history. Just as when Michael Vick became the first black quarterback selected number one overall in the NFL draft, or when Steve McNair became the first black quarterback to win MVP, or when Warren Moon, as an undrafted player, became the first and only black quarterback elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What about Doug Williams being the first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP? Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts were the first pair of black quarterbacks to start in the same Super Bowl against each other. What a way to celebrate Black History Month. To understand the magnitude of the situation, you must understand the plight of the black quarterback over the years. They were said to not be intelligent enough to play quarterback in the NFL. They had their positions changed after college to wide receiver or defensive back most of the time. The NFL has been around for 102 seasons. In 55 of them, there wasn't a single starting black quarterback. Prior to 1987, only in 1981 did more than one minority quarterback play at least half his team games. In 1983, none did. For black quarterbacks, the journey began in 1923 when Fritz Pollard played the position for the Hammond Pros before most official stats were kept. The records show nothing more than games played and three extra points kicked. After Pollard, the NFL drought for black quarterbacks lasted 45 years. It wasn't until Marlon Briscoe started for a season in Denver back in 1968, until the next black quarterback ever saw extensive action. We did have a couple here and there over the next 20 seasons, like Vince Evans and Warren Moon, but from 1987 to 1996, no season saw more than three black quarterbacks start at least eight of their games. In 1997, things began to change. Five got the nod, including Moon, Jeff Blake, Tony Banks, Steve McNair, and Cordell Stewart. However, only McNair was a first-round pick, while Stewart wore the nickname Slash after predominantly being used as a returner and receiver his first two seasons. Finally, in 1999, the NFL saw Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith, and Dante Culpepper drafted in the first round by the Philadelphia Eagles, Cincinnati Bengals, and Minnesota Vikings, respectively. After seeing only four black quarterbacks ever drafted in the first round, three were taken in the first 11 picks. By 2000, a movement was brewing. Culpepper and McNabb were Pro Bowlers in their first years as starters, each winning 11 games. McNair joined them in Honolulu, while Sean King, Charlie Batch, Jeff Blake, Akili Smith, and Cordell Stewart all started at least half their team's games. Meanwhile, Banks started eight games for the eventual world champion Baltimore Ravens. He's the first black quarterback to start at least half the games for a Super Bowl winner. Do you see what I'm getting at? On February 12th, we had the first two black quarterbacks start the same Super Bowl game. My, how tides are changing. Not only are we smart enough, but the modern-day quarterbacks that are being coveted have the skill sets more aligned with the traditional black quarterback. The drop-back pocket passer is fading away, and the athletic dual-threat quarterbacks are the players of choice now. Sounds like the black quarterback is here to stay. So Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes carry the torch well. Even though the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl, you are both winners. You've just become true African-American heroes and a part of Black History Month forever. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the You Tell Me Show. Up next, we have a moment in Black history. On August the 30th of 1967, Thurgood Marshall became the first African American to be confirmed as a Supreme Court Justice. He would remain on the Supreme Court for 24 years before retiring for health reasons, leaving a legacy of upholding the rights of the individual as guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. From a young age, Thurgood Marshall seemed destined for a place in the American justice system. His parents instilled in him an appreciation for the Constitution, a feeling that was reinforced by his school teachers who forced him to read the document as punishment for his misbehavior. After graduating from Lincoln University in 1930, Marshall sought admission to the University of Maryland School of Law, but was turned away because of the school's segregation policy, which effectively forbade black students from studying with whites. Instead, Marshall attended Howard University Law School, from which he graduated magna cum laude in 1933. Marshall later successfully sued Maryland School of Law for their unfair admissions policies. But that's a story for another day. Now moving right along, Thurgood set up a private practice in his home state of Maryland where he quickly established a reputation as a lawyer for the little man. In a year's time, he began working with the Baltimore NAACP and went on to become the organization's chief counsel by the time he was 32 years old in 1940. Over the next two decades, Marshall distinguished himself as one of the country's leading advocates for individual rights, winning 29 of 32 cases he argued in front of the Supreme Court, all of which challenged in some way the separate but equal doctrine that had been established by the landmark case Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896. The high watermark of Marshall's career as a litigator came in 1954 with the victory in Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka. In that case, Marshall argued that the separate but equal principle was unconstitutional and designed to keep black people as near to slavery as possible. The late, great Thurgood Marshall, a true African-American icon and hero. We'll be right back on the You Tell Me Show. The young men and women of upstate New York are lucky to have a community program called Don't Cheat, Go Hard. Don't Cheat, Go Hard teaches our youth to give maximum effort in everything they do. Charles B. Coase Sr. and Jr. know the true definition of Don't Cheat, Go Hard. That's why they founded the program. If you want your child to learn the right skills and get the proper mentoring to be successful in anything they choose to do in life, call Charles and Charles. Just leave a message on our message board at Anchor FM under the You Tell Me Show, or look us up on Facebook as Street Artists LLC. You can also send us email correspondence at streetartistllc@streetartist.com. Remember, the definition of cheating is to act dishonestly or unfairly to gain an advantage. The definition of going hard is doing something with 100% maximum effort. Don't cheat, go hard. Apply this to all things in life and watch good things happen. Welcome back to the You Tell Me Show. On this next segment, we're going to take a look back at another episode that we had on Moment in Black History, where we discussed Ebony Magazine and Nat Turner. So let's take a look back and then listen. Welcome back to the You Tell Me Show. Up next, we have our Moments in Black History. Ebony Magazine is a pictorial news magazine published by Chicago, Illinois-based Johnson Publishing Company and first appeared in November of 1945. Created by John H. Johnson, who modeled his publication after Life magazine, Ebony celebrated African American life and culture by depicting the achievements of black Americans. It honored black identity by portraying black life, refuting stereotypes, and inspiring readers to overcome racial and other barriers to success. John H. Johnson began his career with Negro Digest in 1942 and started Ebony 3 years later. Both magazines were so successful that in 1972, the Magazine Publishers Association selected Johnson Magazine Publisher of the Year. And now on to our next moment. On November 5th, Nathaniel Nat Turner was tried in Southampton County Court and sentenced to execution. He was hanged and then skinned on November 11th. In total, the state executed 55 people, banished many more, and acquitted a few. The state reimbursed the slaveholders for their slaves. Nathaniel Nat Turner was a slave who led a rebellion of enslaved people on August 21st of 1831. His actions set off a massacre of up to 200 black people and a new wave of oppressive legislation prohibiting the education, movement, and assembly of enslaved people. The rebellion also stiffened pro-slavery anti-abolitionist convictions that persisted in the region until the American Civil War. Turner was born on the Virginia plantation of Benjamin Turner, who allowed him to be instructed in reading, writing, and religion. Sold three times in his childhood and hired out to John Travis, he became a fiery preacher and leader of African slaves on Benjamin Turner's plantation and in his Southampton County neighborhood, claiming that he was chosen by God to lead them from bondage. Believing in signs and hearing divine voices, Turner was convinced by an eclipse of the sun that the time to rise had come, and he enlisted the help of four other slave men in the area. An insurrection was planned, aborted, and rescheduled for August 21st of 1831, when he and six others killed the Travis family, managed to secure arms and horses, and enlisted about 75 other slaves in a disorganized insurrection that resulted in the murder of an estimated 55 white people. The controversy of his actions still incites debates today on whether his actions were justified. Based on the conditions of African Americans during slavery, many say that they were. To some, he was a mass murderer, while to most black people, he was a hero. Nathaniel Nat Turner, an American hero or not, you tell me. This has been our moment in black history. Welcome back to the show. Since it's Black History Month, and we're looking back at so many different segments from our moments in Black history, I felt it was only right that if we also go back and look at one of our segments called Man Stop Playing. And this particular Man Stop Playing is called Iconic Face. Yo, y'all, check this one out. Welcome to this week's episode of Man Stop Playing. The bandages are off, but the charges are sticking. Man Stop Playing. An Alabama woman named Iconic Face was found guilty this week on two counts of armed robbery after holding up a Mississippi bank 2 years ago, a crime she allegedly committed to fund her plastic surgery. Man Stop Playing. Face's case was originally slated for trial in June, but the surgery-obsessed thief requested to plead guilty beforehand. Man, stop playing. After the 39-year-old's plea, Circuit Judge Randy Mueller sentenced Face to the maximum term of 15 years on each count to run concurrently. I guess she's gonna face the music now. Man, stop playing. The Ozarks native charges stem from a 2019 heist of the Bank Corp South in Gulfport, Mississippi. At the time, prosecutors argued that her plan was to rob banks to finance sexual reassignment surgery. Man, stop playing. Police have been alerted to Face's 2019 crime by a hidden alarm activated by the besieged bank branch. Upon their arrival, bank employees inform officers the suspect had approached the teller window and handed the clerk a hand-scrawled note that read, "You have 1 minute to give the money. Do not be wrong or die." Man, stop playing. No weapon was seen, although tellers did recall the suspect had a swollen face indicative of a recent cosmetic operation. Man, stop playing. The robbery was captured on the surveillance system, while authorities discovered an abandoned Cadillac near the bank, which they traced back to Face. Can you imagine the look on her face when they caught her? Man, stop playing. Meanwhile, authorities sent still images of the serial surgery recipient with a memo imploring the public to help ID the suspect. Man, stop playing. Her face was all over the news. Tellers were easily able to recognize the suspected criminal's iconic face in the photo lineup. Man, stop playing. The criminal was detained March 30th at Houston's George Bush Intercontinental Airport after re-entering the country from Mexico. It was suspected she had received her bank job funded procedure there, as subsequent mugshot showed her sporting surgical tape around her nose. Man, stop playing. Under her birth name of Jimmy Maurice Lewis II, Face was found guilty at age 26 of another robbery in 2009 in the U.S. District Court of Northern Alabama. Face was sentenced and served 51 months in federal prison in that case, in which she reportedly demanded a teller give her at least $20,000. After her release, she legally changed her name to Iconic Face. Man, stop playing. Now she's facing 15 years. Man, stop playing. This has been your Man Stop Playing Moment of the Week. We've come to the end of another episode of the You Tell Me Show. I want to thank all of you who tuned in today. Please continue to celebrate Black History Month. Yes, every month has Black History in it, but our brothers and sisters picked this month out specifically to celebrate our heroes. On this episode, we discuss Stokely Carmichael, aka Kwame Ture, and his impact on the Black Power Movement. We also discussed the plight of the Black quarterback in the National Football League. Congratulations to Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs for winning this year's Super Bowl. Another Black quarterback is at the top of the NFL. Patrick was named Most Valuable Player for his play at the most important position. My, how times have changed. We also look back at a couple more of our previous moments in Black history regarding Thurgood Marshall, Ebony Magazine, and Nat Turner. Love him or hate him, he left his mark on Black history in America. We also play back one of our original Man Stop Playing Moments of the Week. I hope you enjoyed the story about Iconic Face. I told you, you can't make this stuff up. I want to thank the pastors Archie and Calvin Bridges for their songs, Always On Time and So Easy to Love. Make sure to look them up on all the media platforms. Remember to look for the You Tell Me Show on Anchor FM, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, and Spotify. Please don't forget to press that support button so we can continue to bring you our content. This is Professor Kaz saying peace and love from the You Tell Me Show. Gonna sit on the sideline to be your own boss, make up your own mind. Find time to shine and uplift my brothers and sisters, co-shooting the gift. This world is in an uproar, and it's time for us to break down the door. Stand up in equality, now fight for yours. Man, you tell me, and you tell me, and you tell me, and you tell me, and you tell me. And you tell me.